This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Your Holiness, Discover the Light Within by Debbie Ford, read by Randy Thomas. Foreword written and read by Arielle Ford. Introduction written and read by Marianne Williamson. For my beautiful mother, Sheila, who has always been my biggest champion, I love you. Forward.
My sister, the late, great, amazing Debbie Ford, was a New York Times best-selling author of 10 books who dedicated her life to her global community of students and coaches, teaching her groundbreaking work on the shadow and innovating the life-changing shadow process workshop. Along with raising her son, Beau, her work was her greatest passion and focus. During the last 5 years of her life, as she courageously dealt with a rare cancer, she found the will and strength to get out of bed and teach for a week, and then she'd collapse for a month to rest up and generate enough energy to do it again. Now that Debbie's on the other side, her tremendous desire to serve humanity has not slowed down. Whether you believe in an afterlife or not, I continue to receive emails, phone calls, and social media messages on a near daily basis from her friends, students, coaches, and even strangers sharing with me that Debbie is guiding them from the other side via dreams, direct messages, and signs. Her presence after her death on those who are living has made itself known in so many ways. We don't expect this to stop, especially given this incredible account. A longtime family friend, celebrated medium, and close confidant of Debbie's, James von Prague, sent an invitation for a private reading to my husband Brian and me, together with my mom, Sheila. We were to visit his new home, which is located just 45 minutes from us, and he would provide a reading with Debbie and other deceased relatives who were willing to come through time and space to meet with us. Of course, without hesitation, we all said yes, because these days, if you want a reading with James, you have to attend his public events, and there are often 3,000 or more people there. And then you've got to hope that your loved one on the other side is pushy enough to grab his attention. On a beautiful, warm, sunny Monday afternoon, the week before Christmas, we drove to James's beautiful home north of San Diego. After a tour of his serene personal paradise, we got comfortable in his very white and extremely modern office. He began the session. All of us were so excited to hear who would come through, as well as experience the gifts of our dear friend James. Within seconds, Debbie spoke through James with a request for me to write a prayer book with her. It was as if she had been waiting to announce this request for some time. She made a case for how she would help me through the entire process. It could be fun and easy, she said. I didn't understand what she was talking about and was cringing with every detail. How would this be possible? Would I have to impose on James for daily readings to get the material? I said no as politely as you could to a sister who's passed away. Thankfully, Debbie eventually moved on to other topics. Next, James asked us, "Who's Minnie?" She keeps talking about Minnie. I explained that Minnie is Beau's half-sister, who almost nobody knows about. In fact, you can't even Google this information. "Ah, now I get it," James said. "She says to tell Beau that when Minnie was visiting recently, she was with them every precious moment." Geez, how did James know that Minnie had come to visit Beau for Thanksgiving from her home in London just a few weeks prior? Damn, I thought, this guy is beyond good. He is truly a master. It seems like the entire cosmos comes through this kind and gentle man. The reading progressed and Brian's parents came through with sweet messages. My stepfather, Doc, came through, which made my mom incredibly happy. and a few other deceased relatives came through who had valuable messages to share. In between the visits from the other loved ones, Debbie would break through, continuing to implore me to write a prayer book with her. I had tried to say no, but apparently social etiquette is different for the dead. By the end of our 90-minute session, I caved in and said yes. Clueless as to how this would happen, I knew my sister well enough that she would never let this go until I agreed. It was hard to believe that even from the other side, she could still boss me around. Persistence is her middle name. As we drove home on the freeway later that day, Brian began talking about all the many meaningful and cherished hours he spent with Debbie at her chemo treatments. He had memories of her talking about writing prayers over the years. He remembered how important they were to her, and he suggested that I contact Julie to see what she might know. Julie, in addition to being someone we consider family, was and is a vast resource of all things Debbie. She spent 7 years working as Debbie's right hand, and her titles included executive assistant, producer, webmaster, editorial assistant, business manager, and collaborator on many projects. At the end of Debbie's life, Julie was her primary caregiver and gave of herself tirelessly to make sure Debbie's every need was taken care of. The love and strong bond between them was a joy and an honor to witness. Today, she continues Debbie's legacy as president and chief operating officer of the Ford Institute. I called Julie, and I shared the details of the reading. I finished the story, and Julie was not surprised in the least. Her response floored me. "Arielle, Debbie wrote an entire prayer book called Your Holiness. Do you want me to send you the manuscript?" Within minutes, I was reading the book you now hold in your hands. I was mesmerized. I had completely forgotten that the catalyst for Debbie's total life-saving transformation from a life of using hard drugs was the extraordinary power of prayer. I had forgotten that nearly 30 years before she passed on, she had fallen in love with God, and that she had experienced a true miracle thanks to prayer. As I read each page, my heart continued to expand, and I felt as if Debbie was with me, enjoying each prayer together. Her words leapt off the page, and I could feel her loving energy all around me, her frequency enveloping me with a comforting presence. Not only was the book brilliant and beautifully written, it was complete. The book was never published, and perhaps Debbie felt the time was not right until now. I realized immediately how divine the timing of all of this was, and how many hearts and minds this book would touch. And of course, I was delighted that I wouldn't have to figure out how to co-author a book with an angel from the other side. Debbie wanted me to help be the messenger. When I finished reading, I picked up the phone and called Gideon Weil at Harper One. I told him about the extraordinary reading with James and the manuscript I held in my hands. He had been Debbie's editor for many years, and he's also my editor and James Von Prague's editor. No coincidences here. After listening to this crazy story, Gideon admitted, much to my astonishment, that he had been feeling guilty for the past few years. Debbie wrestled balancing her hard-hitting psychological insights with a desire to write more about spirituality and how each of us has a divine self. Gideon eventually persuaded Debbie to stay in her lane and focus on what she was best known for, the psychological. Debbie, of course, had never given up, and apparently she believes the moment to flex her spiritual insights is now. I sent him the manuscript, and within days he agreed to publish it. You just can't make this stuff up. Sometimes it's just better to surrender to the magic and grace of this thing called life. As the end of her precious life approached, Debbie told me she was completely satisfied that her mission was fulfilled, that she had experienced a great life, and that the last year of her life, despite her weakened condition and constant pain, had been the best year of her life. It's exciting to have proof that even from her new home in heaven, she continues to share her deep wisdom. Debbie's love and affinity for prayer carried her through some of her darkest moments of her life. I am beyond thrilled that she found a way to let us know this book existed, and that in doing so, her inspiring words are now available to lift and enlighten the rest of us. I hope you enjoy this book as much as we enjoyed the adventure of uncovering this treasure. Ariel Ford, La Jolla, California.
Introduction.
In science, technology, medicine, business, almost any other corner of human invention, there's always new information being discovered. When it comes to spirituality, however, there's never new information discovered, so much as new insight gleaned from information we already have. The great spiritual avatars and source materials have articulated the great religious truths. The journey of consciousness is humanity's evolving to the point of embodying what we know. The scientist and the spiritual teacher, therefore, are different not only in what they reveal externally, but in what they reveal internally. While who a scientist is has little to do with the import of his or her scientific discovery, who the spiritual transmitter is has everything to do with the depth of his or her transmission. When it comes to information of the soul, only one who, him or herself, has truly been informed can pass along spiritual information beyond a mere sharing of abstract concepts. What makes Your Holiness such a beautiful book is not only what Debbie Ford wrote on the page, but also the obvious depths from which she wrote it. To those of us who knew Debbie as a vibrant, generous, courageous woman, it is hard to read these words without some level of sorrow that she isn't here to see them published. On the other hand, the book itself is a reminder of a greater reality than that of the material plane, a reality of which we are all a part and through which the spirit remains alive forever. Debbie found her own comfort and healing in aligning with that reality, and one of her greatest gifts to the world while she was here was to remind us all that such a power exists. In this book, she does more than simply remind us. In these pages, she wrote of more than God's existence or even of his power. She wrote of how to experience that power by practicing the authentic steps of spiritual transformation. Prayer, forgiveness, and humility before God. Debbie did not pretend that she hadn't fallen down in life or that she alone had lifted herself back up. Rather, she was brutally honest with herself and others about her problems, the demonic, addictive forces that had laid her flat on the ground and threatened to destroy her life. And she wrote beautifully about the moments of surrender through which she felt God had lifted her back up. Realizing the depth of the drug hell into which she had descended, she wrote that more than anything else at that time, she wanted to change. She wanted to stop living the lie she knew she was living. Lying desperate on the cold tiles of a bathroom floor at the height of her madness, she called out to God in the midst of her pain. I wanted to change. I needed to change so badly. I began begging and crying hysterically. With my head in my hands, I sobbed uncontrollably, until I suddenly realized that something inside me had shifted. A calm had come over me, a silence that was palpable. In asking God, this higher power, to enter my awareness, something inside me opened up and relaxed. The stress in my body had released, and the screaming voice in my mind had subsided. Peace had enveloped my entire self. Even the filthy, disgusting bathroom floor didn't look so bad. There was a release inside me, a letting go, a clarity, and expansiveness. But more importantly, there was hope. My God, I had hope. Just what I needed. That hope was not just what Debbie needed. It's a hope that we all need. Today, her message has particular poignancy for those bound in the hell of drug addiction like she was, many of whom die all too frequently on those same dirty floors. Yet most of us, whatever the form of our darkness, can relate to the pain of a life gone wrong. Debbie lived the human journey of having been to hell and back, then shared with her audiences how God had done for her what she couldn't do for herself. If even one person reads this book and embraces the thought that if God would restore Debbie to new life, then perhaps he will do it for me too, then she will have given a gift in this lifetime that makes her worthy of our eternal gratitude. What had Debbie done that day? The one key she had never used before, but which at that moment made all the difference. What made that the day the clouds broke through at last? That day, she prayed. She completely surrendered her life to God. As an addict, Debbie learned that no amount of self-will or self-discipline was strong enough to lift her above the ever-recurring temptations to drag her life back into the downward spiral that had haunted her for years. She would go on to develop not just a life of prayer, but a true devotee's understanding of its effects that she now delivers to others for their own healing. The fruits of her labor are in your hands. Prayer is the path that delivers us to our most divine selves, she wrote. It washes us clean and tills the soil of our consciousness so that more life-affirming, holy thoughts and feelings can take root. When we are in the presence of our power, potential, beauty, worthiness, and light, we are not as vulnerable to critical thoughts of despair, self-doubt, greed, fear, blame, or darkness. When we are connected to our spiritual essence, we feel good enough, wanted, loved, confident, safe, and inspired. And when we are disconnected, we feel scared, small, weak, unworthy, unlovable, abandoned, and alone. As Emmett Fox once said in The Golden Key, if you're thinking about your difficulty, you're not thinking about God. Through the vehicle of prayer, we come to know God. Through the power of prayer, we come to know our holiness. Debbie realized from bitter experience that only the light of her holiness could keep her safe and protected from the darkness of her ego mind. She was clear that an alignment with the holiness in which we were all created was and is the greatest, most meaningful, and most important pursuit of our lives. What does it take to step into and reclaim your holiness? I'm going to assert that it is much easier than you might imagine, she wrote. Most of us think we have to become something, learn something, succeed at something, or achieve something. But in truth, the realization of our holiest self requires nothing from the outer world. Stepping into our holiness is merely a process of acceptance, of being willing to see the totality of ourselves. It is the recognition of the magnificence and grandness of our own potential. Yet Debbie never sugarcoated the journey that it takes to reach our grand potential. She was never blind to the difficulties or the challenges that go along with spiritual pursuit. There is no holiness without love, and love is not always easy. We must face the places where we hold lovelessness within our consciousness, and we must root it out. Until then, we will always be vulnerable to the toxicity of a spiritually inauthentic existence. Naming steps to the dissolution of our lovelessness, she calls in this book for a consciousness cleanse. You must acknowledge that you have allowed thoughts and feelings that are inconsistent with the vibration of love into the sacred environment of your mind, body, and heart. You must admit that you consciously and unconsciously, intentionally and unintentionally, opened up to these frequencies, and you chose to interpret some of your experiences in negative ways, which is what made them toxic to you. It's important to realize that your interpretations of your life's events are what make them nourishing or toxic. Debbie was rigorous in her approach to spiritual growth, and she urges the reader to be rigorous as well. She knew from experience that her thoughts could bring her down, and she knew that only thoughts of God could bring her back up. Moreover, she knew that only she could choose which thoughts to hold within her mind. When she chose holiness, the power of her faith created an anti-gravitational pull that overrode all lower forces. You are the only one who can choose. You are as free to change vibrational frequencies as you are to change your clothes. Your thoughts, your emotions, the images you hold in your mind, the energetic signals that you send out to all those around you. These are the tools that are available to you in this life experience. Use them to your full advantage. Do not for one more minute deny your holiness, your godliness, and the power of your true self. Because you are wanted, needed, and more importantly, a holy addition to this world. So open up, commit, and enjoy this journey, your holy ride. Debbie did rise up from the depths of her drug-induced despair that day, and she did, in time, enjoy her ride. She became a successful teacher, author, and coach, living happily a life filled with love and abundance. Even then, though, it wasn't as though she didn't face life's challenges. The idea of one or two eureka moments and then everything is perfect from that point forward didn't hold true for Debbie, and doesn't hold true for any of us. She wrote honestly of the lies and prejudices that all of us are heir to while living in a space so permeated by the illusions of the world. Alignment with our holiness doesn't mean all the sorrow of life then ends, but it does mean the sorrows of life become bearable. What we gain from an experience of holiness is a set of new eyes through which to view heartaches and the spiritual strength to rise above them. In the midst of life's heartaches, we must find the eyes to see beyond our current situation. The fact remains that we are going to have tough times. People are going to die. We are going to lose love. We are going to struggle. We can pray until we are blue in the face for things to be different, but most of the time we are powerless to stop heartache because it is an inevitable part of life. Creation and destruction, life and death, good times and bad times. If you have a father who is riddled with cancer, there is 99% chance that he is going to die. Praying for him not to, although you could do it, is a prayer that you can't expect God to answer. But what you can pray for, what you do have influence over, is for you to be the strongest, most centered, and loving person possible during those times. You can pray for the courage to love through your fear, to allow love in through other sources. You can pray for enough love in your heart so you can grieve in a healthy way. You can pray for your loved one to find comfort, to have faith, to have an easy passing. What you do have the power over, what you do need, is the understanding that this is life, that this too shall pass, and that an all-loving grace is with you and supports you in transcending the moment, enabling you to see beyond your current circumstances. The mantra, "This too shall pass," lifts your consciousness so you can look at your life 5 days or 5 months out and know that you are going to be okay. Debbie's triumph lay not in a long life, but in a meaningful life, for herself and for many others. She died way too young from the perspective of those who greedily would have wished to have her with us longer. Yet the life she lived was one of inspiration to so many, and with this book, she continues to give of her spiritual bounty. Her inspiration seemed boundless, yet with characteristic generosity, she insisted it was a gift that is available to all. Inspiration is magical, ever-present and unlimited. You only have to tap into it. You don't have to become inspired. You are inspired. Beyond all limitations of human life, inspiration is the emanating force of the universe. It lives vibrantly in the present moment when you are connected to God and know yourself and God as one. When you step outside your intellect, your mind, your emotions, and your ego. Inside your ego structure, you can be excited, motivated, and even driven. But that is not inspiration. Inspiration comes from the invisible world, bringing spirit into matter. You just have to reach up and pull it down. That, in the end, is what Debbie will always be known for. Her willingness, her ability, and her passion for pulling down God's grace from the ethers of spirit into the regions of the earth. She never seemed to forget, though still vulnerable to the same machinations of the ego mind that had done so much damage in her own life. It was Debbie's compassion for the pain of others that drew so many of us to her, and it is the special spark that permeates her work. There is no greater demonstration of a power greater than the world than that this book exists, through which Debbie can teach and testify even now. Her sister, Arielle, does more than keep her memory alive. She keeps alive the thought that Debbie is living still in the mind of God, in an eternal dimension by whatever name we call it. Debbie called it holiness, and she lived the light of her holiness beautifully. She was a woman, with all the wonderful, gutsy, human dimensions that go along with that. But as she points out so poignantly throughout this book, holiness was the higher, most essential truth of who all of us are. Through her holiness and through this book, she remains with us now and will be with us forever. Marianne Williamson.
Section 1. You are drenched in holiness. Drenched in holiness. Dear God, Spirit, Divine Mother, on this day I ask you to grant this request. May I know who I am and what I am every moment of every day. May I be a catalyst for light and love and bring inspiration to those whose eyes I meet. May I have the strength to stand tall in the face of conflict and the courage to speak my voice even when I'm scared. May I have the humility to follow my heart and the passion to live my soul's desires. May I seek to know the highest truth and dismiss the gravitational pull of my lower self. May I embrace and love the totality of myself, my darkness, as well as my light. May I be brave enough to hear my heart, to let it soften, so that I may gracefully choose faith over fear. Today is my day to surrender anything that stands between the sacredness of my humanity and my divinity. May I be drenched in my holiness and engulfed by your love. May all else melt away. And so it is, and it is so. Amen. I was in my fourth drug treatment center, and it was day 10 of a 28-day program. For over 15 years, I had suffered drug addiction and the underlying insecurities and self-loathing that had birthed it. I had been in and out of treatment centers and could never seem to make it all the way through the program. At around the 10-day mark, I would begin to feel strong, willful, and hopeful, and convinced that I had it. I don't know what I thought I had, but the ache that led me into the treatment center would usually fade away by this point, replaced by a desperate need to escape. But on this particular day, I was keenly aware of where my prison break would take me. It was no mystery, because it had happened so many times before. I would finagle my way out of a treatment center, claiming I was healed and had found enlightenment and freedom from my addictions. And then, either hours or days later, I would be back in the same vicious cycle of filling my small body with drugs, chasing a feel-good moment, and sinking back down into the depths of hell and hopelessness. This particular morning, by the grace of God, I was finally able to see where the path of running away would lead me. And I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that I couldn't do it one more time. I knew that if I ran away, I would either find myself back in the same place or, worse, not survive. Even with this awareness, the urge to escape continued to well up inside me, and the voices in my head grew louder and louder. "Run, Debbie, run! Get out of here! You're not one of them. You don't need this. You can do it alone." For hours, I turned my attention to this inner voice and listened. I wanted to believe it. I wanted it to be the truth. But the harsh reality was, this voice had let me down so many times before. So for the first time, I decided to resist the urgings of this voice. And I chose to at least explore the possibility that there was some force inside me that could give me relief, that could help me where I clearly was not able to help myself. So I excused myself from my group therapy session, joyfully so, and proceeded down the dark, dingy corridor that led to the bathroom. I have to tell you, the bathroom of this treatment center was a disgusting place. It smelled like dried urine. The stench was almost more than I could bear. The tiled floor and the grout between the tiles, which probably had started out gray, were now black with mold. I'm a bit of a clean freak, and my top priority is beauty. I need it. I crave it. This bathroom was neither clean nor beautiful. But I was so filled with toxic emotions and so desperate for help, I decided to do the unthinkable. I got down on the floor on my hands and knees in a prayer position and began to pray. I asked God, or my higher power as they call it in the 12-step program, to come to me, to help me, to rescue me from my pain and my self-destruction. My body was shaking and tears were rolling down my cheeks. I was desperate. Although I had heard people talk about God in many 12-step meetings, for me, God was nothing more than a concept in my mind. The actual experience or knowing of God did not exist inside me. For a few minutes, I listened to the ranting in my head about how stupid this was, how disgusted I was to be here, and how embarrassed I felt begging some power I didn't even believe in to help me. I felt angry at God, at my parents, and at all those who had hurt me, believing that if it wasn't for all them, I wouldn't be here, stooping to an all-time low. I tried to convince myself that I could get up and leave, but my fear that I would die if I ran away now urged me to stay. I thought back to the day before I had entered this round of treatment. I had been living in an apartment at Turnberry Isle Yacht and Racquet Club in South Florida. I owned a thriving clothing store in the Aventura Mall with one of the most prestigious men in the state as my business partner. From the outside, it looked like I had it all. I drove around in my white convertible Porsche, wore the hippest clothes, hung out with the coolest people, and regularly partied among Miami's nightlife until the wee hours of the morning. Certainly my outer shell looked just right. I was the girl who had money, success, opportunities, friendships, and the world at my fingertips. But in the quietness of my inner world, I hated myself. I hated my life. I was angry, judgmental, confused, and disorganized. I was tired, desperate, and lonely. And the only thing that ever took away my pain was the carefully selected mixture of drugs that I faithfully consumed each day. The truth was that the drugs had stopped working long ago. And although I could barely endure the thought of having to live without them, I knew I wouldn't live much longer with them. Just 2 weeks before, I had scored a bottle of Percodams from a girl I had befriended who worked in a pharmacy. I thought I'd struck gold when I met her, She was the answer to my dreams and the solution to the countless hours I spent trying to round up enough drugs to get me through each week. But on this dark day, this day of reckoning, that bottle was now empty. It wasn't that I had never experienced an empty bottle before, but there'd been 1,000 pills in this big brown glass pharmaceutical bottle. And less than 14 days later, they were all gone. I now needed to take at least 10 Percodans to catch a feel-good moment, when a few years earlier I had needed only one. The bag of cocaine I dipped the ends of my cigarettes into to accompany my Percodan high was empty as well. Here I was, face to face with an out-of-control, all-consuming drug addiction, surrounded by ashtrays, empty cartons of Salems, and the bottle of 10-milligram Valiums I used to begin each day. I was obsessed with trying to figure out how my life had come to this. I seemed to be a genius at rationalizing, denying, lying, and making up excuses for my bad behavior. But on this day, with the empty Percodan bottle in hand, I knew in the depth of my soul that I just couldn't go on living like this. I couldn't pretend that I was okay for one more day. All my clothes were thrown all over my room since I had ransacked every drawer looking for pills I might have hidden and dollar bills that might still contain a residue of cocaine. My purses were scattered across my closet floor from my tireless search, knowing there must be something, some residue somewhere. All the plastic pill bottles in my bathroom where I would typically hide a few pills here and there now lay uncapped on the marble countertop. As I had frantically searched, I felt the desperation, the fear, the powerlessness of needing a fix and being unable to find one. I could have picked up the phone, but I was too ashamed and humiliated to call even my drug dealers. No one could consume this amount of drugs in such a short time. No cute leather dress or outrageous dangling earrings could hide the pathetic nature of this scene. Even my drug dealers would know what a loser I was. When I realized that I would be embarrassed in front of people I considered the scum of the earth, I knew there was no other option. I had to get help. The thought that I was going to die had been second to the sleazy feeling of being a blown-out drug addict, the poor little rich girl. There I had been with everything, and yet with nothing, because I had lost myself. After recalling this desperate and painful scene, my mind snapped back to the present moment, and I once again became aware of the cold tile underneath me. On my hands and knees, not knowing what else to do, I recited the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I focused intently on each phrase because I ached for some serenity. More than anything in the world, I wanted a few minutes of peace inside my noisy mind. I whispered the words, just loud enough so I could hear them, over and over and over again. God, give me the courage to change. I wanted to change. I needed to change so badly. I began begging and crying hysterically. With my head in my hands, I sobbed uncontrollably until I suddenly realized that something inside me had shifted. A calm had come over me, a silence that was palpable. In asking God, this higher power, to enter my awareness, something inside me had opened up and relaxed. The stress in my body had released, and the screaming voice in my mind had subsided. Peace had enveloped my entire self. Even the filthy, disgusting bathroom floor didn't look so bad. There was a release inside me, a letting go, a clarity, an expansiveness. But more importantly, there was hope. My God, I had hope, just what I needed. That morning I had experienced something very special. Even though I didn't know what it was, it had lifted me out of the pain of my emotional body, at least for the time being, and brought me to the perfection of the present moment. I knew then I could make it through another day. And at that point, one more day was all I really needed. Suddenly, I was filled with joy and excitement, and I wanted to stand up and shout out to the world, "I can do it!" I share with you this experience on the bathroom floor of the Palm Beach Institute, because it was the moment when I knew that a power greater than myself existed. It was the moment when I began to heal and transform my inner world and form a deep, loving relationship with the power that I now know as God. Every day for the next 18 days, I made the choice to find my way back into that bathroom, which became my holy sanctuary, a place where I could reconnect with the all-loving presence that had delivered me to a higher aspect of myself. Through this daily ritual, I found the strength to finally make it through all 28 days of treatment. On a warm summer day nearly 24 years ago, I walked out of my last treatment center knowing that I had tapped into a power and a source that could move mountains, change people's lives, and lead me to a future that I couldn't even fathom yet. I knew in every cell of my being that I needed to further explore, understand, and devote myself to finding and knowing God. Hallelujah. Dear God, dance with me. Hold me tight like a lover. Spin me around until a smile covers my face. Lift me up, and when my feet touch the ground, let me know that I am one with you. As I resumed my life, I was consumed by the need to understand how this shift had occurred. Why had I found the strength this time that I had failed to find so many times before? How had I gone from feeling deep pain, agony, and despair to experiencing peace, joy, and contentment? How had I felt so alone and separate one moment, then, a moment later, completely connected, one with all that is, seen and unseen? How had I gone from seeing the world through the self-centered eyes of my wounded ego to glimpsing the unbelievable intricacies of my spiritual path? To this day, I remain awed and fascinated by what's available to any one of us when we open ourselves up to the unseen forces that exist within and around us. The quest to understand this powerful source has led me on a long, unbelievable journey from the depths of darkness and despair to unimaginable moments of light, love, creativity, and joy. And now, excitedly, I share with you what I have learned from the greatest spiritual teachers of our time, as well as the ancient sages and spiritual masters whose teachings continue to live on in our awareness. In the pages that follow, you will find a process that will unleash this power within you so that you can heal your heart at the deepest level and return to your rightful nature, your truest essence, your holiness. The shift. Dear God, open me up so that I may know you. Show me your sweetness in the smiles I see. Open me up to the love that you are, while you awaken me to the love that I am. What happened on the bathroom floor that day, I now know, is what's called a shift in consciousness. For a few moments, I was lifted out of the pain of my emotional body and the insanity of my tumultuous mind, and transported to a place that is all-loving, all-knowing, quiet, secure, and relaxed. I had entered the Holy Land, where God consciousness resides, in just a few moments, and that's all it took. I was able to open a place inside myself that had the power to shift and change my entire life. This shift is available to any one of us at any time, because it requires nothing more than for us to slip out of our separate human experience and reconnect with the part within us that is one with the divine source. Ask and we shall receive. Our willingness to ask is what opens the door. Our willingness to admit that we do not know everything and that the smallness of our individual selves means they are not able to do it all on their own unhooks us from the trance of our individual realities. Once we are able to own up to this truth and concede that we can't do this alone, the lower aspects of us settle down and the door to the higher realms opens. This is what allows for the shift to occur. The divine does not push us or invite itself through the closed door of our lower selves. It respectfully allows us to make the choice to live an ego-driven life or a God-centered life. In other words, we can choose to take the difficult road of doing it our way on our own, or to surrender to a higher will, God's will, and live in partnership with the greater whole. If we choose the latter, we must ask that our hearts remain open and extend the invitation to which God will gracefully respond by re-entering our awareness. When divine consciousness enters, the shift occurs, and we are engulfed by the love of our higher selves. We make the space inside for God to enter by opening up to a larger reality than the one we are presently living in. When the divine enters, we can feel it. It shifts our thoughts, which shifts our feelings. Emmett Fox, a man I believe is one of the greatest spiritual leaders of the 20th century, tells us, "This state of mind is really the one thing that is worth possessing, for having that, one has all, and lacking that, one has nothing." To reach this state is the real object of prayer. He goes on to say that prayer truly does deliver us to a holy place, because nothing defiled in any way can reach us there. In this higher state of consciousness, we know we are protected, powerful, and strong. We know we have the power to make trauma, heartache, dis-ease, negative emotions, and other day-to-day problems of life disappear. That's right, disappear. When we are one with our Creator, when we are willing, pay attention to this word, to not know, to not understand, to not have it all figured out, to not be in charge, to not have life go the way we think it should go, then miracles can happen. Life can surprise us only when we are willing to be surprised. And what does that take? It takes living a God-centered life. It takes not knowing. This is the life-changing shift to open up to new realities over and over and over again, and to let go of the illusion that what we see and what we know is right or real. Many of our beliefs and intellectual knowledge, while justified, are limited. They may be perfectly correct in the small confines of our emotional world or our intellectual understanding, but this is not what we are talking about here. In universal consciousness, God consciousness, most of what we consider to be facts about ourselves probably are not. What we know and what we are certain about are probably the limiting beliefs that keep the door closed to our higher selves and to divine consciousness. Each moment, we get to choose to look through the small, limited eyes of our individual consciousness, or to be humble enough to take the leap outside what we may believe or know to be true, and trust that there is a world beyond what we are able to grasp at this moment, a power that hungers to guide us and support us, a power whose plan for us is so much greater than our own. To experience the shift, we must become humble. Humility opens the door and lights the way so we can crawl out of the dungeon of darkness and despair. Humility is the most difficult state for the ego because our ego views needing something outside ourselves as a sign of weakness. Therefore, wanting the experience of humility in and of itself asserts that we know we need God's help in order to be whole and complete. This assertion is a humble act and opens the door to the higher states of consciousness. In my opinion, humility is the greatest spiritual asset any one of us could ask for, because it is the gateway to experiencing heaven on earth. So I ask you now, are you willing to have this experience? To be humble enough to let go of all the concepts in your mind that you've been attached to? Are you willing to give up what you know and what you believe? If you are, you might just find the answers to your prayers. Knowing God. Let me know God's grace. Let me see God's face. Let me feel God's love. Let me return to God's embrace. The God that I speak of is not an all-powerful presence that lives outside us, but rather a universal force that resonates in the core of our being, connecting us to all that is and all that will be. It's an all-encompassing energy that is creative, powerful, and wise, and a force that is often referred to as spirit, love, universal consciousness, divine order, nature, or as a particular spiritual master. It is known by many names, and many paths can lead us to reconnect with the God presence within us, to deepen our relationship with this universal force which has the power to light us up like a Christmas tree. All we need is the humility to step outside the grandiosity of our limited self and express an honest, humble desire to know God. To know God is to know ourselves in our highest and purest form. It is to glimpse the part of us that exists beyond our limitations, our stories, our doubts, our fears, and our critical mind. Even though this force is unseen, when we join with it, when our thoughts and beliefs and feelings are aligned with it, we can feel it. Yes, we can feel it. It's palpable. God is a very real vibration that exists. We can feel it pulsating through our body. We can feel it through the love in our heart and the satisfaction of our soul. It's free, and yet it's the richest substance that any of us could hope to possess. When we tap into the God force within us, we feel like we're royalty, lavished in jewels. We want for nothing because we have everything. Our divine connection is as precious as a baby's breath. It's pure, it's easy, it's natural, and it's peaceful. It's like being bathed in God's grace. It's intoxicating. It allows us to breathe deeply, effortlessly, and everyone who comes near it can feel it. It is who we are at the deepest level. It is our holiness, pure and simple. The process of knowing God does not take place in our mind, but in our heart. No matter what we may understand intellectually about God consciousness, our mind can't take us where our heart longs to go. Our intellectual knowledge of God often prevents us from having the very real experience of God, because intellectual knowledge alone limits the possibility of something greater. When we are in a state of knowing inside our intellect, it limits what we can see, what we can do, what we can feel, and what we will experience. Prayer lifts us out of our mind. Funny, out of our mind. When we're out of our mind, we're free, we're peaceful, and we're connected and ready to soar. Prayer lifts us beyond intellectual reasoning to the level of consciousness where we have a direct experience of God. When we are willing to journey beyond what we are certain we know, we surrender to what the Buddhists call beginner's mind. Beginner's mind refers to the state of an innocent child, the state of wonder in which we lived before we developed rigid beliefs and righteous opinions about ourselves and the world around us. This is the state in which we are led easily and effortlessly to the next right action, the action that will reveal our highest desires. But in order to return to this place of innocence, we must first relinquish what we think we already know. We must be willing to venture outside our mind and open up to the enormity of who we are and what God is. It is here that we become open and malleable enough to make the journey into our heart, where we will return to our holiness. Finding faith. Take me to the Holy Land, lead me to new landscapes, deliver me to your kingdom, so that I may see through new eyes. As someone whose faith has been tested more than once, I am a firm believer that we must take time out of our life each day to nourish our faith. We can't take it for granted that we know God. We can have faith one day and lose our faith the next. We can have faith and then not even know that we've lost it. We can be watching the news and see that a young child has been molested and murdered, and unconsciously we can get angry at God, cutting ourselves off from our divine connection and losing our faith. There are things going on around us in the world every minute of every day that would make any sane person question whether there even is a God. The moments that we take to fall still, to reclaim our faith, to affirm that there is a God we are intimately connected to, are the most important moments of our day. In these vital moments, we reconnect with our faith, and faith is the spiritual sustenance of our life. Faith is a friend by our side. When we allow it in, it acts as the floor beneath our feet. When we have faith, we trust that there is a power, an unseen force guiding us. Faith means trusting in something beyond what we know. Having faith that we are a part of a bigger whole melts away our separateness and leaves us bathed in the wisdom that we are never alone. At each moment, we have to ask ourselves, where is my faith right now? Is my faith actually in my fears? Am I placing my faith in the idea that I'm unworthy and that I won't get what I want? Or am I placing my faith in the perfection of the universe? Do I have faith that I will be guided to the circumstances that will give me exactly what I need? Most of us misplace our faith. We have more faith in our pain, our past, our negative beliefs, and our fears than we do in our innate right to be happy. While faith opens us up, fear shuts us down. To find our faith, we must give up control, let go of the way we think things should be, and surrender. Wave the white flag of defeat. Prayer is the spiritual treatment that allows us to surrender our ego's need for control and to regain trust in the divine nature of the universe. Surrender in and of itself is an act of faith. It's a gift that we give ourselves. It's saying, even though I feel scared or I'm not sure where I'm going, I trust that all will turn out in my highest and best interest. It is a sign that we have chosen to trust that a higher power will tend to our needs and guide us in the direction of our heart's truest desires. And this trust is the healing balm that restores our faith. Divine faith offers us hope, possibility, and promise. It opens us up to the limitless opportunities that exist in God's superstore. If we choose to live in faith, we will be blessed with the support and partnership of the Universal Intelligence Network